You're listening to Community Radio WRFG Atlanta and on the World Wide Web at WRFG.org. 89.3 FM. We're proudly your listener-supported station for progressive information.
Okay. Greetings. You're listening to WRFG 89.3 FM, your station for progressive information. This is Alternative Perspectives, produced by B. Kuvertier, and contributions by Andre Holmes, Dion Bates, Lakara Foster, and Ghetto Gospel. Alternative Perspectives is the voice of the GLBTIQ community and our allies. The focus being the issues that affect the GLBTIQ community, social, economic, religious, and political, to educate and inform about the lives of the gay, lesbian, bisexual, transgender, intersex, queer, and questioning community, and find the common humanity that connects us all.
Good evening. You are listening to WRFG's Alternative Perspectives. I'm Dion Bates. We have a full show for you tonight, including an update on gay marriage issues with Ghetto Gospel. Andre Holmes will talk with Earl Folks, president of the International Federation of Black Prides, during the Pride and Politics segment as he explores who sets the policy agenda of Black Gay America. We will also talk with representatives of Youth Pride, who will share some exciting upcoming happenings in that organization. And as you all know, tonight is Tea Talk Tuesday. In the second half hour, we will be joined by TransAdvocate.com creator Marty Abernathy as we tackle some of the hot topics impacting the transgender community. Diana Bagby has our SOVO news headlines, and as always, we will provide you with national and international news headlines. So, sit back, relax. Alternative Perspective starts right now.
Diana, you there? Diana, you there?
I'm here.
All right. How you doing?
I'm great, thank you.
What you got for us?
Good evening. Here are some headlines from Southern Voice. The Human Rights Campaign held an Atlanta Tax Day protest this morning at the Atlanta Regional Post Office in Hapeville. Today is the last day to file taxes. Local clergy spoke about the inequities between heterosexual couples and gay couples face when filing taxes. The Defense of Marriage Act bars the federal government from recognizing legal same-sex marriages and denies gay couples more than 1,000 benefits available to married couples. Also, Youth Pride's Evolve program to prevent suicide among gay youth is holding its annual fundraiser this Friday, April 18th, at Bill Lowe's Gallery in Midtown. The event, in which 100% of proceeds go directly to the Evolve program, will fund periodic training by licensed counselors to Youth Pride staff, volunteers, and youth leaders to give them tools to identify young people at high risk for suicide. Youth Pride hopes to raise $30,000 at the event. South African art will be the focus at the National AIDS Education and Services for Minorities 12th Annual Art Auction Fundraiser on April 19th, beginning at 6 p.m. at 600 Main Street. Entitled Artistically Yours, South Africa, the event features 75 to 100 original works from South Africa, ranging from sculpture to paintings. The auction is the largest event the Atlanta-based organization holds each year, and contributes a significant portion of the organization's $1.5 million operating costs. And Kennesaw State University will host the 6th Annual LGBTQ Student and Organization Summit on April 19th. Part of the effort includes the 5th Annual Georgia LGBTQ Educator of the Year Award. Shane Windmeyer, co-founder and executive director of Campus Pride, will serve as keynote speaker. His address will lead off a series of panels covering advocacy, politics, homelessness, parental reaction, and legal issues facing gay teenagers. And those are Southern Voice headlines. For more information on these stories, as well as many more, check us out at www.sovo.com.
Okay. Thank you so much, Diana.
All right. Thank you. Have
All right.
Me.
You too now.
All right.
All right. East Elbow News. And to remind everybody, opinions expressed on WRFG do not necessarily represent the opinions of Radio Free Georgia Broadcasting Foundation, Inc., its staff, or volunteers.
With the same gender marriage blast. Members of the GLBT community around the country look to California to set the tone for the passing of same gender marriage. Marriage equality came to the tables of the California Supreme Court in 1948, Perez versus Sharp, where an interracial couple wanted to get married. The California Supreme Court, in a 4-3 decision, narrowly comes down on the side of justice and throws out California's anti-miscegenation law. It quotes a 1942 case, Skinner versus Oklahoma, to reiterate that marriage is a fundamental right. The case, Skinner versus Oklahoma, goes further, saying the right to marry is the right to join in marriage with the person of one's choice. And Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger stated April 11th at the 2008 Log Cabin Republican National Convention in San Diego that he would oppose the anti-gay ballot measure circulating around the state that would find marriage for same-gender couples in the California Constitution. The government went on to say he would always be there to fight against such an amendment. It was the first public comment the governor has made regarding the proposed ballot initiative. In a statement by Equality California Executive Director Jeff Cost, we applaud Governor Schwarzenegger for standing with the GLBT community as we oppose the Discriminatory Act. And we are thrilled that he will be there with us to fight against it should it qualify for the ballot. EQCA Executive Director Jeff Kors also states, equality is not a partisan issue, and the governor demonstrated that with his statement. This is Ghetto Gospel, and that's all for the Same Gender Marriage Blast.
He's the Anglican Archbishop Emeritus of Cape Town, South Africa, who was awarded the Nobel Peace Prize in 1984 for his anti-apartheid and international human rights activism. Desmond Tutu has been a staunch advocate for lesbi-gay equality for many years, but ironically, he'd never spoken directly to a large, predominantly LGBT audience until this week. Tutu was in San Francisco to accept an award from the International Gay and Lesbian Human Rights Commission for being what the group calls a moral luminary whose inclusive approach to human rights advocacy paves the way for a better world. At a pre-event press conference, Tutu told reporters why he was going to use his acceptance speech to, in part, apologize on behalf of his church for its treatment of gay and lesbian people, and why he's been such a vocal ally for LGBT rights around the world.
I do apologize for the way our church has often treated gay and lesbian people, made them feel excluded, and then to say to our sisters and brothers, you are members of this family, and you are people of infinite worth because you have been created in the image of God. God didn't make a mistake in creating you. with that particular sexual orientation. God created you because God loves you, and God still loves you, and God will continue to love you. Whatever other people might say or think about you, that does not denigrate, does not in any way subvert your worth. It's the same kind of thing that we had to keep saying to people who were the victims of racist injustice, that people have identified a biological attribute as being the thing that invests us, I mean, us with worth, and that's a total nonsense. Because what invests us with a worth is intrinsic to who we are. It's not an extrinsic attribute. It's intrinsic, and it is universal, or it is nothing. You know, it is universal. It's either that all human beings, regardless, are human beings of infinite worth.
That was Anglican Archbishop Emeritus and Nobel Peace Prize winner Desmond Tutu speaking with reporters this week prior to his acceptance of the Outspoken Award at A Celebration of Courage, the International Gay and Lesbian Human Rights Commission's annual gala award ceremony in San Francisco.
And at the awards itself.
Frequently hounded, the parts of offensive jokes, discriminated against, vilified, molested, and even killed as targets of homophobia. Most of you still manage to remain extraordinary human beings, compassionate, caring, self-sacrificing, refusing to be embittered. Thank you for your part in trying to help make our world a better place. Would you be willing to join me in clapping you?
Yes, indeed. Okay, unprecedented speech in San Francisco on April 8th of this year. Addressing the GLBT community by Archbishop Desmond Tutu when we are still being demonized, okay, and we're still being beat up and killed. He has apologized to the entire community. Yeah. Yes, indeed. What'd you say?
I said, this is our time.
Yeah, okay. And we have on the phone, though, and I'm going to put him right on. We do have John Paul. Hello, John Paul?
Hey, Betty, how are you?
Good. From Youth Pride, you have an event coming up?
We do. We have our program called Evolve. We have an event coming up this Friday from 6 to 10 at the Bill Lowe Gallery.
Mm-hmm.
And Evolve is our suicide prevention and awareness program. You know, suicide is still pretty much a taboo here in the U.S. Not a lot of people like to talk about it.
Mm-hmm.
And LGBTQ youth are about four times higher to complete suicide than heterosexual youth.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, Youth Pride is a place where we want young people to thrive. And they can't thrive if they're dealing with depression, suicidal ideation, self-worth issues. So we combat that by providing young people with free psychological counseling by licensed clinical social workers, and we pay for it 100%. So this fundraiser is to help us be able to provide life-saving information and assistance to any young person who expresses suicidal ideation or might be a little depressed and need someone to talk to on a more professional level than we can provide here at Youth Pride.
Okay. Could you give us information as to where the public can get more information?
Yeah, they can.
Your website, telephone number?
Yeah, they can go to our website, which is www.youthpride.org,
mm-hmm.
and they can check it out there, or our MySpace account, which is myspace.com/evolve_YP. And like I said, the event is this Friday, April 18th,
mm-hmm.
from 6 to 10, and that's at the Bill Lowe Gallery. And, you know, that's kind of right where West Peachtree and Peachtree intersect.
Okay.
In Midtown. It's, the actual address is 1447 Peachtree Street, and it's in that funky building called the Silhouette Building. It's got the people painted on the side of it.
Okay.
So it's gonna be a stellar event. It's going to just be completely amazing.
All right. Cool beans. Thank you so much for calling in, John Paul, and giving us that information.
All right, Betty.
And maybe you can
so
give us an update, you know, next week or the week after.
Yeah, I would love to.
Tell us how it turned out.
All right, Betty. Thanks.
All right, thank you so much.
Y'all have a great night.
All right, you too now.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. And with that, we're going to go right into our national international news. Andre Dion.
I'm Andre Holmes, and in this edition of our AP Look Around the Nation and Around the World, we start in Worcester, Massachusetts, where a gay hate becomes a family affair, according to 365gay.com News Center staff. Three members of a Worcester, Massachusetts family are facing trial on hate crimes charges following an incident in an apartment where two men were attacked in what police describe as a homophobic assault.
In the Lone Star State, GOP platform to stay anti-gay after effort by log cabin Republicans fail. 10 years and still exclusion for the log cabin Republicans in Texas. The platform calls for a federal constitutional amendment banning gay marriage and opposes any legal recognition whatsoever for same-sex couples.
In Albuquerque, New Mexico, a photographer is set to appeal a human rights fine for refusing to take gay couple pictures. Attorneys for a photographer say they will appeal as far as it will go a finding that she violated the New Mexico human rights law by refusing to take pictures of the commitment ceremony of a lesbian couple.
Gay Catholics to protest papal visit. Pope Benedict XVI may not see them or hear them, but aggrieved Roman Catholic activists hope his U.S. visit this week will help them draw attention to issues ranging from the ordination of women and gay rights to sex abuse by priests and the Vatican ban on contraception.
In our first stop across the globe, we highlight a New Zealand story by the New Zealand Daily News. Living with HIV long-term raises concerns. News that the quality of life of people infected with HIV has significantly improved in recent years is being welcomed by the AIDS Foundation. But the organization harbors concerns for the future regarding the effects of living long-term with the virus and toxic medications and a possible link to sudden deaths amongst long-term HIV-positive men.
In Cairo, Egypt, men convicted for being gay. An Egyptian judicial official said four HIV-positive men have been convicted of being homosexual and sentenced to 3 years in prison, followed by 3 years of close police supervision. More than 100 human rights groups have slammed the trial and described them as mainly driven by ignorance and fear of AIDS, warning that it could undermine HIV/AIDS prevention efforts in Egypt.
In El Salvador, a gay man denied claim as a refugee and fears being sent back. Joaquin Ramirez is afraid to be sent home to his native El Salvador and face the three police officers that he claims raped him in a sugarcane field 2 years ago. The 39-year-old HIV-positive man said the accused perpetrators have visited his family and threatened to kill him because he infected them with the virus that causes AIDS. And that concludes our international news wrap. We do have one additional calendar item, and that is the 20th anniversary screening of Tongues Untied, Marlon Rizzi's controversial classic documentary chronicling the black gay male experience at Idrum Gallery, Friday, April 18th at 8 p.m. And the gallery, Idrum, is at 290 Martin Luther King Drive, Southeast Atlanta. Log on to www.inthelifeatl.com for more information.
Okay, thank you, Anme, Dion. And tonight we have a Pride and Politics segment coming up with Anme, and we're going to get right into that.
You're listening to Pride and Politics with Anre Holmes. In this edition of Pride and Politics, we're taking a look at how social activism is making Black gay America better. As the 2008 Black Pride celebrations kick off this season, Pride and Politics looks into the work of groups and organizations daring to make Black gay America better. We have the International Federation of Black Prides working to mobilize what is now considered a Black Pride movement. We also have the work of the National Black Justice Coalition working to eradicate homophobia in the Black Church, and men of the National Gay Black Men's Advocacy Coalition helping to keep members of the community alive as they are on the front lines of assisting with HIV and AIDS funding for groups and AIDS service organizations in the effort. The question, though, remains, who sets the gay agenda? In a world where conspiracy theories run amok and many question the authenticity and relevance of Black gay leadership and are becoming even more disillusioned with traditional mainstream Black leadership, we have joining us Earl Folks, President of the International Federation, to talk about just who sets the agenda. Welcome, Earl.
Hey, how are you?
I'm doing good. I'm doing great. So I know that's a big question, but when we talk about this whole idea of agenda setting, what I want to put into context is that about 7 years ago, the National Gay and Lesbian Task Force's Policy Institute conducted a study around the country, about 9 or 10 Black Prides, where they looked at the issues that were relevant to Black LGBT people. And among those issues, 4 key issues came about, issues ranging from HIV AIDS, hate crimes, marriage equality, and the issue of the criminal justice system. Earl, are these issues still relevant to the community?
Well, I participated in that study and helped set it up. And I have to say, first of all, there's somewhat controversy surrounding the study, the people involved. I know there was a change in some of the researchers. And what I would say is that marriage, I found it interesting then, I find it interesting now that marriage came up in that study. Because I think they said, I believe what they framed as marriage and domestic partnership issue. And I'm not sure if the word marriage or partnership came up, because even today, I will tell you, several years ago, the Federation conducted a survey with gatekeepers around the country. And these are people who led organizations, and they could be social service organizations, they could be social groups. They're people who were considered leaders in their community. And we surveyed 174 of these people in 39 states, and dozens of communities. And I'm talking about Arizona, I'm talking about Idaho, I'm talking about places where you wouldn't necessarily think of Black LGBT folks. And they were not given a list, and they were told to name 3 issues that impact their community. Of all those people, only 2 people named marriage. And the reason why I say that, I think marriage is not as big as an issue. I prefer to use the word family issues. I think that we need to look at reconstructing what is a family, and I think marriage should be an option. But I don't think many Black LGBT folks see marriage as the end-all, because most of us live in many non-traditional families, which would be limited if you only include marriage. So I think that criminal justice, definitely HIV AIDS, And other health, because I think the increase of cervical cancer among black lesbians is also very frightening. So I would say health care issues, the lack of health care, of affordable health care.
Earl, speak up a little bit on the phone. We're having trouble hearing.
Okay, I'm going to speak directly. Is it better?
Yes, that's
okay.
Wonderful.
I would say that marriage is not an issue as much as access to affordable health care, access to affordable housing, hate crimes, definitely, and homophobia.
Now, when we talk about those issues, who is setting this agenda?
Well, you know, that's a very good question, because agendas are usually set by those people who have the funding. So I can definitely tell you that black gay folks are not setting the agenda. What we are doing is responding to some of the needs in our community by trying to find appropriate funding sources. The agenda is set by the larger LGBT community. When marriage was a big issue, all the money went towards marriage. And unless you were doing marriage equality work, you were not getting a lot of money. So you either follow the money or you just don't get much. ENDA and hate crimes are now a big issue. Coalition building, homophobia in the black church. We in the black community did not decide that we wanted to fight homophobia in the black church by putting money into it. We've been doing that battle for all our lives. Is when the larger community and basically the white funders say, you know what, year 2004, there was a ballot initiative in Ohio that was banning marriage, and that the black church was joining with those people who were anti-gay, and enough votes, 67,000 votes switched, many of them black, and they voted for the Republicans, and they voted for this marriage ban, and the Republican, we got Bush again, and we got a marriage ban, and so now we need to deal with homophobia in the black church. So now we need black folks to work with black folks to change homophobia. And unfortunately, I don't think that those strategies necessarily work for us in the short term.
Well, you know, you're mentioning some things that may not sit well with some people, and we understand that you are one man, but it really shows the fact of the matter is that this community is not a monolithic community. It's representative of many different voices. And whereas you mentioned that the priority for some people may not be marriage, for some people it is, and then for some people who feel like homophobia in the black church is not a major issue, some people do consider it a major issue. But across the board, what is being done to kind of make sure that the work that's being done nationally is being connected to local grassroots groups, LGBT groups of color specifically?
Well, and I want to first make a comment to what you just said. I'm not saying that these issues are not important. They're very, very, very important. And I think the connection is, having visited many, many black communities, I've been to 120 black prides, and I've been to many communities. And I think that we have a lot of survival issues, you know, housing and education and access to health care and just basic needs that as many black people are, you know, have to hustle and get a, you know, earn a living. Those are very, very indicative of many LGBT folks who are black. And the connection is oftentimes being in Washington and probably suffering from this affliction myself, that we tend to see things more globally. And the reality is that we don't often take the time to connect to the needs of those local communities. Yes, marriage is an important option to have. However, if you don't have health care, if you don't have appropriate housing, and you're struggling to maintain your nuclear family, which be made of blood kin and non-blood kin, marriage is not something that you're focusing on. And I think that sometimes those are class issues.
Earl, we've just got about 30 seconds left. I do want to your point about the issues are important, I want to give people an opportunity if they want to get involved in these issues. Because one thing that Jasmine Canick says over at the National Black Justice Coalition is, we as African Americans don't have the luxury of having a singular issue. We are dealing with the fight against racism, and we're dealing with being in our community. And so what can people do if they want to get involved?
Well, they have to do several things. They have to get involved in the political process. They have to vote and support those candidates who also can deal with a number of issues in their communities. They also have to support organizations like the National Black Justice Coalition and the International Federation of Black Pride, those local prides who are also doing that community awareness and HIV prevention and awareness and building community. And those organizations have to be supported, as well as those other local organizations doing HIV/AIDS work. And they just have
thank
to
you
be
so much, Earl. I
so the greater community can see.
Earl, I gotta cut you off. We're done with our segment. I thank you so much. Thank you so much, Earl, for being part of the first Pride in Politics segment, where the personal is political. I'm Andre Holmes. Thank you.
Okay, thank you for that. And we're gonna go. Hello, Reed. You there?
Yes, I am.
Okay, hold on 1 second. Okay. And we're going to have Marty Abernathy is on the other line. We're going to put her on. And this one here is gone off. Okay. Marty, you there?
Uh-huh.
Hi, Marty. And welcome. Hello. Hi, welcome. Welcome to Alternative Perspectives on WRFG 89.3 FM in Atlanta. And Reed, you have...
Yes.
I've missed you.
Yes, it's been a while.
Thanks. Yes.
I apologize for my previous opportunity.
Well, I understand. There's so much going on in the transgender community. And Reed Vandenberg is a trans therapist from Portland, Oregon. And Marty, we have a short bio that we're going to read for a minute. So both of you just hold on for a second.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, Marty has been quite active in the transgender community. As a matter of fact, her baby, her creation, transadvocate.com, exists to give a voice for transgender advocates in the ever-growing blog sphere. Marty Abernathy is TransAdvocate's main page blogger, but is also a podcaster, activist, and radiologic technologist in Indianapolis, Indiana. She's been a part of various internet radio ventures such as TSR Live, The Tea Party, and The Radical Trannies, just to name a few. As an advocate, she's previously been involved with the Indiana Transgender Rights Advocacy Alliance, Rock Indiana Campaign for Equality, and the National Transgender Advocacy Coalition. She's also taken vital roles in a grassroots community organizer in the 2003 Indianapolis Tax Day protest, the 2004 Indy Pride HRC protest, as well as at the rally at the State House in 2005. Marty Abernathy, we welcome you.
Okay. All right. Reed.
Those things are the good things that everyone says, so we'll just stay with
those are the good things. We're going to deal with the good things, huh? Reed, what is going on out there in Portland, Oregon?
Well, there's been a lot of hoopla, which has actually become national, about the pregnant trans man. He lives not far from Portland.
Mm-hmm.
That's been a big topic of concern with all my clients ever since the story broke and he appeared on Oprah.
Really?
Yeah, so that's the biggest thing that's happening out there right now, is dealing with all the media attention that's surrounding that particular situation.
Wow. Okay. And Marty, you recently went to a conference. Hello, Marty, you there?
What was that?
Okay. I'm sorry. You recently went to a conference.
Yes, I went to the International Foundation for Gender Education annual conference in Tucson, Arizona.
Okay. And they had workshops, and any particular, subject matter that was covered, or was it everything, or?
There were just about anything that you could imagine. There was a workshop for, they had workshops on They focused this year a lot on trans men. They wanted to bring in more trans men.
Okay.
So they had quite a few workshops for trans men.
Mm-hmm.
A couple that I went to, just as support.
Okay.
But and I learned a lot in the ones that I did go to. But there were other workshops. There were workshops for surgery. There were some for like the history of the trans movement.
Mm-hmm.
Joelle Ruby Ryan did one on body image issues.
Mm.
People, I mean, just you name it.
You name it, it was dealt with. Okay, yeah, because these are all issues that are, you know, everyday concerns for the transgender community. Reed, did you know about the conference?
I knew about it, yes. James Green gave the keynote speech, and he's a friend of mine. He was talking about it. We had dinner the other evening, so he was telling me about the conference. He didn't say, though, that it was trying to focus more on trans men than it had in the past. I didn't know that. That's great.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
Okay, Reed, you're a female to male.
Mm-hmm.
Do you categorize yourself as a trans man or just transgender or?
I do characterize myself as a trans guy or a trans man, something of that sort. I don't use the terminology just a man because it leaves out so much of my history and the journey that I had to go on to get to where I am today.
Right.
So I'm not real comfortable with that language. It's a little too binary for me.
Oh, okay. And Marty is male to female, right?
Yeah, last I checked.
Last you checked. Okay. All right. Thank you for that. Okay. Now,
you'll never get a straight answer.
I see that. I see. That's cool, though. That's cool. Okay. I can relate to that. All right.
That's even my answers are queer.
Yeah. I mean, I just go with whatever. I just go with whatever. However, people perceive me at the moment. Do you know what I mean?
You know, Reed. You said something that was very interesting with regards to, I guess, how people identify. In terms of yourself, you prefer to identify as a trans man or a trans guy, and you know, and you know, right now, you know, the whole ENDA is still in the hot seat, and trying to get rights for transgender individuals. And I was just wondering, do you think that labels or the way that people identify, do you think that that's important in this fight for transgender rights? Do you think that it's important that people identify as a trans man or a trans woman? Does it make a difference whether they identify that way or whether they just identify as a man or as a woman?
Okay,
well,
just to say that was Dr. Dionne Bates. She is also a psychologist, so so everyone is aware. Okay, sorry to interrupt.
Not a problem. Mm-hmm. The way I tend to view that is that the people that we're talking to generally don't know very much about transgender people or transgender individuals, and their conceptualization is that you do transition from one to the other, and that's exactly how they would view it. So you become a man or you become a woman, and when you're dealing with people who have that level of knowledge, they're not going to understand the nuances of my identifying as a trans man as opposed to a trans guy.
Right.
Or they're not going to understand that nuance. So I think it's important for the individuals to find their own language and what resonates with them in terms of how they identify. But when you're talking about presenting it to Congress, for example, I think it's almost more important to keep it at the level that they can understand, which would be, these are men, these are women, they did transition to get there, but they deserve full civil rights like everyone else.
Right.
And maybe later on, when there's a little more understanding in the culture, we can get into more of the nuances of the language that people use to self-describe. So I think it's really different when you're talking about an internal community dialogue between individuals. Like I identify as a trans man, somebody else might identify as a man and say, no, I left woman behind and therefore there's none of that in me. When you're having that level of dialogue, it's been my experience that it just confuses people who don't have a lot of prior knowledge. They get confused by that level of discussion. And then they start tuning you out because they're confused and they think they just don't get it and they don't understand. They think you're splitting hairs with your terminology, and then you tend to lose them.
Marty, do you agree with Reed?
Well, I tend to think that we have to keep in mind that It's not trans protections that are in ENDA. It's gender identity. And gender identity covers a lot more than just transgender people.
Right, right.
You know, and that should always be kept in focus, because gender identity covers Diesel Dykes, Sissy Boy.
Okay, with the Diesel Dykes.
any kind of gender variant identity.
Mm-hmm.
So I understand how most people that aren't trans of some flavor don't understand the difference between sex and gender.
Right.
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 So it is important that under that, I mean, Lord knows with all that we've seen from the whole Thomas Beattie thing, how people don't get the difference between the two.
Yeah.
Well, but Marty, so, you know, you make an extremely good point, and I think a point that a lot of us, me myself included, we forget when thinking about this whole ENDA bill, because one of the things that the ENDA bill will do, hopefully, is to also protect people who may be gay or lesbian, or maybe even straight people who may not necessarily fit with their particular, whose gender or their femininity or their masculinity may not necessarily fit with their sex.
Well, and that's what was so upsetting when they put down 2015, which was the inclusive bill, and put forward 3685, which only includes sexual orientation.
Mm-hmm.
Because a lot of people that are fired that are gay and lesbian, they're fired because of their gender identity. They aren't fired because they put a picture of their spouse on their desk. A lot of people are fired because they act too feminine or they act too masculine.
Mm-hmm.
And those people still, especially gays and lesbians, are not going to be covered.
Right.
And if you look at the case law on this, Jennifer Burke wrote an excellent case book called Breaking the Binary. And anybody that's interested in this, I suggest you go on Amazon and buy that, because I think you can get it at Homosexual Press, too. But it is excellent. It's an excellent, excellent read. It goes from start to finish, the case law, through Diane Schroer. And it really gives you a good perspective on how gays and lesbians have been excluded when it comes to being discriminated against because of their gender identity.
I there's a lot of blogging going on. And
really?
just to get some viewpoints and some opinions here on it, let me put it this way. Let me ask you the question. Where is the misalignment of the HRC thinking when it comes to ENDA?
Well, you have to understand that HRC is, before they are a GLBT organization, they are a political organization.
Mm-hmm.
And it was during the ENDA fight, it was learned that, you know, at least, and this is what we're going on from Representative Frank, that we didn't have the vote for a trans-inclusive ENDA.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if they would have expelled some political capital, it's hard to say, because we don't know exactly.
The little doggy wants to get into it, too.
We don't know exactly whether or not.
What the conversations were in the back rooms, you know.
Well, we don't know who the representatives that were on the fence. So you can't really, know who those people were. But we didn't have the votes.
Right. But given go ahead.
So that's their bottom line.
Right.
Honestly.
But given
their bottom line.
Right. But given the explanation that you just gave, okay, that gender identity is not only for protections for transgender folks, but that also it would protect gay and lesbian.
And anybody that's gender variant.
Right, with gender identity, I mean, where does that, you know, and maybe Reed, you know, you help me out here also, because I find it kind of difficult to sort of kind of justify the decisions that HRC made based on the fact that if they were aware, okay, when they made all these decisions, that gender identity was not just for transgender folks, it would affect everybody in the GLBT community, and if their reasoning for switching from 2015...
That's why we're so mad.
Right, exactly. But yeah. Their reasoning for switching from 2015 to 3685 was that they wanted to get some protections now and then go after the rest of it later, okay? But if they were excluding gender identity, and they were still putting the G, the L, and the B at risk still. So what in heaven's name were they thinking of?
I don't know if it was Reed or Marty, but I think one of you made a very good point. HRC is politically driven.
Mm-hmm.
And when politics are involved, you forget about the little man.
Yeah.
All common sense goes out the window.
Yeah.
Well, and
that's what I stated in the blog.
Not,
you know, politics should never override humanity. Never.
And I would agree with that, but I would also say it's been my experience, because I've been part of queer community for over 30 years, and 20 of that in the lesbian community.
Okay.
And it's been my experience of watching organizations try to switch from G to G and L, then GLB. When they try to tack that T on, it's always an afterthought, and they're treating it like another sexual orientation. And you can do all the trainings you want, but you have to keep hammering away at the difference between sex and gender, or it goes by the wayside because it is politically expedient.
Hmm. Reed, what do you think?
Beg your pardon?
What do you think about that? It's politically expedient?
That they do tend to forget that gender expression is what gets people in trouble, whether they're gay or lesbian or straight or whatever.
Mm.
If you're not doing male right or you're not doing female right, that can get you in trouble in certain situations. Or it can lead to violence, it can lead to being fired, and it doesn't really have as much to do with sexual orientation as it does with how well you're performing your gender. And I think that people who work within GLB civil rights organizations tend to forget that.
I mean, I really tried to, you know, because I was a member of HRC here in Atlanta for 4 years. I was the diversity co-chair, and we did a lot of work, and it wasn't just here in Atlanta, but across this nation. A lot of grassroots volunteers in the diversity division, okay, because it was a relatively new tack on, and when I came on in 2003. It was just beginning to roll out, okay? And we accomplished a lot from then to now, I think. We built a lot of good relationships with the T community across the nation. It just wasn't us here. But they have this, with the debacle of the ENDA, they have literally, okay, HRC I'm speaking of, destroyed that work of diversity because it barely exists anymore.
Well, and I agree, because a good friend of mine in Portland is part of HRC at the local level, the regional level within Portland and the Northwest.
Mm-hmm.
And when the decision first came down, she found out about it before it was publicized, and she called me, and she wanted to talk to me about it because she realized that it was going to destroy credibility that HRC had.
Yeah, absolutely.
And she had been part of trying to build that up for a long time in the Pacific Northwest and in Portland in particular. And she was really upset that they were dropping it at the national level because she felt like it undercut all her efforts.
Yeah. I mean, and they haven't been able to rebuild. I mean,
they've
made a lot of bad decisions. And what I find is, you know, and I know that there's other. If you go up, I'm gonna give a little plug to a blog out there that is where Marty writes and Donna Rose, she was formerly a director of HRC, the only transgender, and she resigned back in November after all of this stuff happened. But Bellerico.org, it's B-I-L-E-R-I-C-O.org. It's a blog and mm-hmm. there was a lot of blogging going on from all over the place about HRC, about the HRC dinners. There was just a blog about the Houston HRC dinner and where the police was called out for the transgender community, which I think is absurd. Mm-hmm. And we have our dinner coming up here in Atlanta, May 3rd, and I hope, I really, you know, pray to God that they do not stoop that low here in Atlanta. And I hope that somebody is listening. And if you want to call in to assure us, anybody from HRC, if you want to call in and to assure us that that won't happen if there is a protest here, I would be very appreciative, okay, because I think it is just, if you go up on Bella Rico, there is a video up there that shows the transgender community, and I think what had happened there was that when the transgender community came into town, saw the police, a lot of them turned around and didn't stay. That's from the gist of what I gather happened, and there was not a big turnout, you know, but yet they're still there, the mounted police, you know, the barricades.
There were six mounted police to 11 trans activists, one who was on a scooter.
A comeback vehicle, okay? I mean, I love that picture because that's what, in the video, it shows her in her scooter, and it has a sign, and it says her name, and in her combat vehicle, you know. I mean, I said, you know, it's like, Jesus, Lord have mercy, that, you know, how can they do this? This is an organization. You know, I tell it like it is. I'm hurt. I'm hurt because I believed in them.
Well, I don't know how much this is damage control or whether this is an isolated thing or not, but Joe Solomonis is going to be in Portland in May, and I got a call from a local trans activist who wanted to gather together, was asked to gather together a small group of trans people to have lunch with him. And I think it's a damage control thing, but what I don't know is whether this is happening in other cities around the country that have strong HRC chapters. Is mm-hmm. this something that Joe is, or HRC is trying to do nationwide?
I can't confirm, but there's rumors here in Atlanta about that also. But uh-huh. I cannot confirm that because I haven't gotten a confirmation. I have inquired to D.C. about it, mm-hmm. you know, because I would like to cover it, you know, and report on it in that capacity. But
I can't hear your guest very well. What?
Oh, Reed? Oh, he said that Joe is going to be going up to Portland and that the T community is trying to gather so that they can have lunch with him.
Well, it's just a few people have been invited to have lunch with him, but I think it was his idea that happened. And what I wasn't sure was whether this is a thing where he's doing a swing through different cities to try to find out how to get HRC back in good graces with the trans community.
It has been asked because I have, you know, and to learn, a lot of people don't know, and because I have been embraced by the transgender community here in Atlanta. Yeah, I've spoken about this in the past. And I stay in touch with the transgender community. I have, you know, they're all friends of mine, and I'm very involved with them. And so sometimes people approach me, and we had a conversation maybe 2 months ago or so, asking me, what can we do to bring the T community back to the table? You know.
Yeah.
Well, Betty,
yeah.
let me ask you, because I know you have, you know, more ears out there than I do in the transgender community. I heard, and I don't know how true this is, and I don't know if maybe you can shed some light on it, but have you heard anything about HRC inviting a transgender woman to speak at their dinner?
I haven't heard.
Oh, okay.
Mm. But at this point, I have no idea who would be, because the only transgender person who was on the steering committee mm-hmm. has resigned from that post,
right?
From that position, and so they have no transgender folks, and I don't
in
know.
Atlanta?
In Atlanta, yes.
Isn't Tracy McDaniel still...
No, she resigned.
Did she?
Yes.
She resigned.
Yes, she did. Dana Owens and myself co-chaired diversity, like I said, for 4 years, and we resigned. We both resigned last year. It's a year, April 1st, it was a year, and there were issues, and we won't go into that, but then the end of stuff happened. But Tracy was on the diversity committee, and she was in line, you know, because we had a secession plan in place for diversity, and Tracy was in that secession plan. So she moved into the position, but she has resigned, and diversity has not been able to get back up on its feet, okay? And but they're attempting. I mean, I'm not saying that they're not trying, but it's just not, you know, working out, I guess, so whatever.
Well, you know, I think what the important thing here to remember is is that it's not, this isn't something personal. We need to do what it takes to get the job done. And but then there is an issue of trust.
Right.
There is a huge issue of trust.
Enormous.
But and I want to make the distinction that personally I'm mad at HRC because of what they said down there at Southern Comfort,
right.
Where Joe came out and said that they would specifically oppose, and then a month later they fold.
Right.
Yeah.
And I know for a fact that there was a concern when Intac lobbied in May, and we brought that up to some of the other trans groups and HRC, and we were told that we didn't know what we were talking about, and that our lobbyists were, quote, crazy.
Right. No, but I'm mad. You know, I don't identify as transgender, okay? But I'm a cross-dresser, and that's why the transgender community has embraced me. But you see, I go back to 2004 when the promise was made, and I was at that table, okay? When it was taken up to Washington, D.C., and the T community was included, and they promised that they would never, ever support any legislation that was not trans inclusive, and they They repeated that in 2007 in September at the SCC. Okay,
and I was told repeatedly. I was told by more than one person that David Smith has said that he would never support opposing a gay rights bill. Mm. And if that's the case, and David Smith is right under Joe Solomony,
right.
You know, so if that's the case, they went down to Atlanta with an agenda.
Right.
And, you know, that is what I'm upset about. I'm not upset with Barney Frank. Barney Frank made a political decision that was based on expediency more than anything else. And, you know, we have to have leadership that has integrity.
Right. Exactly. Exactly, yeah. Because I always felt, and I always said, and I said it in my commentary way back when, I always said that if HRC had stood alongside the rest of the 350 so organizations that formed United ENDA, you know, the politicians would have taken a different way, I think. And if HRC knew, I mean, they knew that this was not going to pass, ultimately, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Why did they take the community into such, you know, chaos? Why did they create this situation and not wait until we had a Democratic president where there was a better chance of getting it passed? You know, that's what were they thinking? That's what drives me insane. Because I mean, what were they thinking?
Well, I think if you look at the people that were the most vulnerable during the end of fight, it was the freshman representatives that were worried. And actually, from what I understand, they actually went to Barney Frank and said that they did not want to vote on the amendment. And from what I understand, from what
they were worried about their political careers.
From what Jimmy Baldwin said,
they had
the votes to pass the amendment that was going to be tacked on. They had the votes,
but they didn't.
Because those people didn't want to take the political hit in Capitol. And that's what it boils down to, I think.
That's what it boils down to. But, you know, humanity. I mean, this is all about humanity. I mean, we're human beings. You're talking about, you know, politics versus humanity. I mean, jeez. It just, to me, is like,
you have to the thing is, too, though, you have to realize that the gender variant people of any stripe are not the people that HRC mainly represent.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. Okay. Reed, Marty, we're running out of time here. We have about 30 seconds. I want to thank both of you for calling in. This is such an important conversation and discussion, and it must continue. You'll be back with us next month. Marty?
Yes.
I invite you back also so that we can keep up with stuff. And your website, Marty, is transadvocate.com, and you can keep up with Marty there. And Reed is transtherapist.com or org?
.com.
Okay. All right. And good night, and thank you. Okay?
Thank you.
All right.